What's the matter? Why are you looking at me like that?
Terror he could not forget.
You think I've done something wrong, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Torment he could not bear.
You think there's something in there, don't you?
Truth he would not face.
You want to see? Hey, take a look!
Michael Caine in The Hand.
Starts Friday at a theater near you. Consult your listings.
Now it's garbage.
Just another movie night.
Hello, hello, everybody, and welcome to the show. We are Just Another Movie Night, and I am Scott, and with me is my phantom limb, Joe.
I was wondering what you're going to come up with. I thought you were going to call me your sixth finger or something like that. Don't ask me why.
You know what we're doing today?
Are we talking trash?
Talking trash indeed. This is our show to review, spoil, debate, crap on, and give second chances to the hated, the lowest rated, the much debated, and often forgotten flicks on the internet, all while asking the question, is this the worst movie ever made? And if not, what is? Because here on the show, we truly believe you can't review film unless you know what the worst is. And it's July, and we are watching a new theme of movie suggested by our friend and listener, Beck, over on Instagram at This Girl Loves Horror. And she also has a podcast called The Girl and the Gay Podcast. And she has chosen Killer Body Parts for us to watch as a theme. So I had to hunt down killer body part films.
I was very excited about this theme. Very excited. So thank you, Beck.
Yeah. So tonight we are watching a movie with the tagline, "It lives, it crawls, and suddenly it kills." We are talking about 1981's The Hand. It has a 5.5 on IMDb from 7,000 reviewers and a 59 on Metacritic. It was written and directed by legendary director Oliver Stone. It's his second feature film and one that led to a run of 12 films that I just love. A 12-film run. Okay. It is based off of Mark Brandel's novel, The Lizard's Tale. And it had a budget of $6.5 million in Canadian money, which is 4.7 US. With it, inflation, that would be about $21.5 million today. It grossed only $2.5 million. It stars legendary actor Michael Caine, who took the role as a payment, a down payment on a new garage.
Oh my God.
Yeah, this is in the line of his doing movies to get money just to pay off something. He did about five of these in a row. In fact, I think the most legendary one is Jaws Revenge that he took, and he famously said in an interview when asked why he did it, he said,
"And someone said to me, I saw that Jaws 4. He said, it stinks. I said, I haven't seen it. I said, but I've seen the house it bought my mother, and it's marvelous."
And to add insult to injury, he was filming Jaws Revenge instead of picking up his Oscar when he won for Hannah and Her Sisters at the Academy Awards. The special effects in this movie were done by legend Stan Winston and Carlo Rambaldi. You know him from Alien and E.T., doing the special effects on those films. The score is by James Horner. Somebody I just fall down the rabbit hole every time we see a James Horner project, because every time we see his movies, I go, that theme sounds really familiar. Yeah.
Oh boy.
He famously did the Alien score, which is also the same score from Wolfen. And he did Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, which sounds like a couple other movies that he did. And the comic art from this movie was actually done by Conan artist Barry Windsor-Smith.
Okay.
John Voight, Dustin Hoffman, Christopher Walken all turned down the role of the lead.
That's a shame.
Yeah. It's also received some flack for being a reproduction of the movies The Hands of Orlok and The Beast with Five Fingers.
Huh.
Yeah, so we watched The Hand tonight. And as our first movie, I started with, we're going to go in order, I think, of the year that it comes out. Because we found a lineup of really interesting killer body part films.
You know, you could have told me that Tom Savini did the special effects on this one, and I would have believed it.
Yeah, I know, not Stan Winston.
I would not have pegged Stan Winston.
Barry Winsley. Yeah, and not Barry. I mean, Carlo Rambaldi. Yeah. Yeah, two legendary special effects artists. Oliver Stone in interviews was very impressed with how many hands they made for this film. Uh-huh. They all did different things.
Oh my God. I mean, did they though? But
one that grabbed, one that moved, one that wiggled its fingers, and one that wiggled its wrist.
You forgot to mention that Bruce McGill is in this.
Well, I didn't list everybody, but yeah, we definitely know a bunch of people in this movie. I looked up Annie McEnroe. She was in, I think she's the woman that sells the house in Beetlejuice.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like you said, we also have Charles Fletcher, who is famous for playing Roger Rabbit. I think we've seen him in a couple movies we've already done on the podcast.
Okay. Yeah. And the little girl that was, she played the daughter in Mommy Dearest.
Okay.
She played Christina as a little girl.
Yeah, she's playing Michael Caine's daughter.
Yeah.
We had to look this up because in this movie, Michael Caine is playing a husband and his wife is played by Andrea Markovic. And we were talking about this. She's in the movie The Stuff and Space Hunter Adventures in the Third Dimension. We talked about their age difference, which is funny because I've always thought Michael Caine was the same age in every movie he's ever done.
It's like Steve Martin.
Yeah, it's an oddity. And by the way, there's a worry on the podcast that every time we do a movie and we talk about a legendary actor, we're jinxed. So I'm always worried about it because the man is 92 right now.
Yes.
And I'm always worried about doing any movie about anybody older.
He's actually 15 years older than the actress that plays his wife. Yeah,
I looked it up and he was 48 while this movie came out, and his lead actress was 33.
Okay, so, makes sense.
Yeah. But let's talk about the movie we just witnessed, because we didn't talk while watching this. We actually stayed, I would say, pretty damn quiet for a good 40-minute stretch.
Okay, well, because I'm not going to lie, this movie had me roped in.
Did it?
You might say it had hand over me.
I was going to say, did it?
It had
hand. Did it grab you? That's what I was saying.
It grabbed me. It choked me. It made me feel things.
Oh, yeah, boy.
I mean, I was roped into this thing.
I'm surprised you were going to say that.
Because I couldn't. You know, it's this is not what I thought it was going to be.
No, and I would say that I wish the tagline for this movie really was a movie about the biggest asshole on Earth.
Darling. Hmm. Do you remember what Dr. Silverman said about going into analysis?
We can't afford it.
But it's so much more important than the money, and I was thinking that if I saved on some things...
I'm going to pay some parasite $100 an hour to listen to me rattle on about my experiences in my mother's womb. You're crazy. After $1,000, you'll probably tell me I have a penis complex because I lost my hand. And after $10,000, you'll probably tell me I'm sane again. No doubt we're all crazy in some ways. Leave that. That doesn't mean we have to go parading out our psychosis to some other psychotic just because he has a white coat and a degree, does it? Bastards.
That's what it could have been about. Like, Michael Caine's character in this movie is the biggest asshole I've ever seen on film. Like,
I mean
this guy is a complete dick.
I mean, he's not a good husband, that's for sure.
A good husband? Is he a good person?
No. He's not really, he's a good artist, but he's not.
Yes.
He's not really a good anything else. But, okay. The premise of this movie is bonkers to me. So when I was going into this, I first of all forgot that you told me that Oliver Stone had directed this.
Yeah.
Which was shocking. Mm-hmm. Okay, shocking. Because I was like, okay, Oliver Stone directed this, and this is going to be on our show, Talking Trash?
I know, and this is a movie that I've long had on my list of shocked that Oliver Stone did a horror movie about a killer hand, and I just never got around to watching it, which is shocking because I love Oliver Stone.
Yeah.
Well, at least I did love Oliver Stone. And can I say this real quick, and I'm sorry to interrupt so much, but I was just going to say that Oliver Stone is like one of the reasons why I love movies.
I know, because your movie was JFK when we first met. Your favorite movie was JFK.
For a long time, it was a movie that just made me think you could do anything in cinema.
Mm-hmm.
And how powerful of a tool it could be. And I don't think I realized that for a very, very long time. I think when I was young, of course, I loved movies, but there was something I never clicked. And then one day, while I watched JFK in the theater with my parents, I was blown away. And I said to myself, this is so much more than I ever thought it was, you know? And I just became fascinated with film in general. And I would definitely say it all comes down to Oliver Stone's movies.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of a crazy, amazing thing. And that's why I'm shocked I never saw this movie. But no, I'm sorry I interrupted. What were you saying?
I don't know. I was just saying that I lost my train of thought. But I'm just saying, like,
when
you told me it was Oliver Stone and Michael Caine, I was like, okay, there's no way that this is on the level of the shit that we watch.
Yeah, and I was going to say that too. I was going to say that we started with highbrow, and that's, I mean, I don't know if it's highbrow, but it has a better pedigree than anything we're going to watch next.
I mean, we're only going downhill from here.
Yeah, I try to start strong.
Oh, yeah, you know, I feel like we should have ended on this because the rest of the month is just going to be pure and utter hot, smelly garbage.
I mean, maybe. Maybe we'll have more fun.
I mean, one of the movies has Ron Jeremy in it.
That's true.
So
that's true.
We're in for some hell.
Well, even that being said, I would say that I would have thought that your first instinct to talk about here would be that this is reminiscent of the episode we did on a movie called The Appointment. Where it was just about a guy driving with crazy, like, hallucinations of what might happen,
yeah,
in his drive. And I felt very similar to this movie because this movie is an hour and 44 minutes, and I would say I felt every minute of it.
Okay. I started to feel this, the end of this movie towards the end. I was like, all right, I'm starting to feel this needs to wrap up now. But not one moment in this movie did I ever think that this was on the level of The Appointment. I hated that movie.
Okay.
But I started to realize what was going on, like, more than halfway through. I was like, okay, well, this is what's going on.
I mean, I guess, would you agree with me on saying there will be a killer hand in this killer hand movie? Because it does not show up enough. And I would say in the hour and 44 minute runtime, it might show up 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah, I think that's being generous about the 10 to 15 minutes. I'm going to go ahead and say there's about 8.5 minutes of this hand.
Yeah, okay. I mean, I'd say that too. I mean,
there's a lot of scenes in this movie that are wasted and, like, filler. Oh, my God,
yeah. I mean, this should have been a better movie. Like, that. I think that's the big takeaway here is this could have been good.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. I guess I'm saying...
we'll talk about that in a minute.
Let's talk about the plot, because I guess from moment one, and reason I was saying that Michael Caine is the biggest asshole character ever, we find out that he is a comic book artist. He has a comic book called Mandro. You would think that wouldn't be so important, but they say it at least a billion times.
Yeah, they say Mandro a lot.
Yeah, and he it's a character that he's created. He writes, he draws, he does everything for. And I don't know if it's successful because a plot point in this movie is that it's kind of, it needs to be bigger, and it could be, and he could utilize that, but he really takes pride in his character. In fact, that you can go as far as the wife does in this movie and say it's the only thing this man loves.
Yeah. So they live, where do they live? In Vermont? It's like a nice house in Vermont.
Gorgeous house on a lake.
So he's an artist and he has like this little cottage out back behind his house where he does his art. So it's like a little secluded kind of like artistic man cave. And that's where he writes and draws and everything. And I didn't get for one second that he had any kind of like real tension with his wife. They seemed to, what? Like right from the beginning, it seemed fine. Like they were just talking in the house and
wow.
Apparently out of nowhere, it comes out where she wants to go to New York to join some sort of an art school or something?
She has a chance. She is like, doing dance and they're in, and she does yoga and she's doing yoga and there's some kind of class study that she can go and join and be some kind of like member in this thing.
It's like some kind of like a society or class or whatever, something like that, where
they're teaching health and stuff like
yeah,
that.
It's like a health something class like or that. Whatever. And so
she needs it.
She wants to do it. And she apparently got accepted to the school because Michael Caine finds an envelope on the desk that says, you know, guess what, you're accepted, blah blah blah. Okay, so
I gotta back up because you were saying that you didn't know there was problems in the relationship,
not for minute one until they started talking.
This is moment one of these two characters were introduced to the wife, and the moment one of this introduction is he is extremely controlling of her. In fact, he expects her to live in his environment where they only see like this one couple and that he is providing with Mandro, right? That he's providing for the family, but she can't have a job of her own or any kind of life of her own.
I mean, he didn't say that.
But it is very implied when she's saying like, hey, you know, the job, the thing is in New York and we have been talking about it and he is basically shutting it down on every level. He's like, oh, I don't know about this place. And she's like, you already told me that we can go. And then he's like, well, you know, I don't know about that place. And I don't think it involves, he's like, oh no, I don't want her to go to a different school. And so it's virtually him shutting her down.
What do you mean you don't want her? He doesn't want her to go to a different school. The kid?
The kid. Their child.
So they have a little girl that we talked about, the actress who played Christina in Mommy Dearest. And she, she's not essential to the plot, really. She's just there.
Well, she does find a lizard's tail, which is also hilarious special effect.
So, yeah. So anyway, so with a wife, I mean, what I mean when I didn't see that there was going to be like monstrous problems, it was weird because he gives her like a kind of like a snarky, like rude comment by saying, you know, why would you want to go there? What, like, what's there for you?
Yeah, and she's like, a wife.
He says she wants to have something for herself, and he doesn't want her to. So I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of dick. But the next scene, I did not realize that the bomb was going to be dropped. Where, you know, they're driving in the car. She's driving, and she says, you know, I don't want you to come to New York with us.
Like, well, it's implied that she wants out of this relationship here. This is the moment where it's like very implied because he has an extreme temper.
Which you can totally see.
It's coming out harder and harder.
She comes out and she's just like, oh, you know, and he's like, well, I don't want you to come with, you know, you probably don't want me to come with you to New York. It sounds like you don't want me to come. And she's like, oh, no, I do want you to come. But I mean, honestly, this woman had a way out. Why didn't she take it? She's obviously not in love with this guy anymore.
She said straight up to him, she basically was saying, well, this is a drive, by the way, and they're driving very close to a truck. That, and there's someone honking at them who, for some reason, thinks that by honking, they'll go around the truck.
Huh? Look out.
I see her.
Get back, you silly cow.
Jesus.
Or they'll change their speed. It's bizarre.
Well, it's a two-lane highway, so...
Yeah. I don't know why this person's honking. What are you doing? You're honking at the truck, and this person's swerving on them. And as their conversation gets heated, things are getting worse. But it's coming out slowly, like you were just saying, that she's saying that you didn't want to come. You didn't want to stay with us in this flat. And he's like, wait a minute, you don't want me to come. And she's kind of like nervous because absolutely she doesn't want him to come because he is misery. Like pure anger and misery. Like he's controlling. He thinks that she shouldn't have. He basically is saying that you shouldn't go and have this thing for yourself.
Yeah, I mean, he's very self-centered. This is his character. So now that we've like established that he's a total dick and he's kind of self-centered because, you know, he's an artist and he only cares about his art. During this drive, she attempts to drive around this huge truck.
Because of the anger, he's screaming
because
at her.
Because he's screaming at her. And so she drives around the truck, and on the other side of the street, naturally, there's an oncoming vehicle. So she swerves into the truck, and let this be a note to everyone. Because I've seen it happen so many times in Florida where I'm driving on a freaking highway, and I see some asshole douche with his goddamn arm hanging out the window. Let's not hang your arm out the window. First of all, we're in Florida. It's too freaking hot to have your goddamn windows down, okay? Like, unless you're in a, you know, convertible and you're, you know, rolling with your homies or whatever. You do not need to have your arm hanging out the window, which he does. So what happens? She goes into the truck and his freaking hand gets cut off.
Yeah, because he's waving the car to move off because there's oncoming traffic, she has to move back over. And since he's waving the car to back off so they can get back over, there is no, for some, I don't understand this at all. The car, for some reason, the back of the truck, the bed of the truck, knocks his hand off.
It goes flying.
It's like a perfect severed hand.
Yeah, it was perfectly severed. It wasn't crushed. It was just perfectly severed. And I was wondering, like, I was going to ask you, but I'd stayed quiet. So I'm like, how has this even happened? Is there a chainsaw on the back of that truck?
I know. I was like, it was set up that there's like a blade or like something.
Where?
Yeah,
it just
knocked it off.
So whatever, movie.
Yeah.
So they pull over and he's gushing blood all over his wife.
My God.
And it's hysterical.
This made me laugh.
That's what I'm telling you. This could have been Tom Savini and it would have definitely sank in just fine because this is that kind of blood that is like watered down. It looks like paint.
It's like a hose.
Yeah, that kind of shit. And it was like spraying out of the freaking stump and everything. It was comical.
Yeah.
So they kind of fast forward after this a little bit. And when he's healing and his arm is healed. So he has like a stump. And they're still together, which I was going to say to you. I'm like, why are these two still together? Obviously, she stayed with him because she feels bad for him.
She stayed with him because she just got his arm severed off during a fight.
I mean, seriously, it was her fault 100%. But, I mean, she was already unhappy in the marriage, so I can't imagine what this situation is going to do.
I'm not going to say it's her fault because she was being, at the time of being screamed at, she also was trying to get away from this guy honking at her. Like uncontrollably,
you know,
and it was him who's waving the car and screaming. So it's like they're both at fault for this moment, but she is staying with him out of, you know, the whole idea of guilt, which is a huge theme of this character. It's like guilt tripping.
Yeah,
and the I don't know, everything about it is. It's wild because he does instantly move to New York and he is with her in New York and she is doing classes and he is, you know, we get the whole fit. And by the way, I just, are you sick of this too in movies that have no hand movies? Like these movies where they're supposed to be a limb and it's clear that the person's arm is longer, but it also turns at the wrist.
Yeah.
And it's like, that wouldn't be there, that
That's
wrist.
That's what I'm saying. Like, okay, why is Stan Winston involved in this? He's much better than what this is.
It's a little shocking. Like,
Like, I know in 1981, they didn't have, like, a whole slew of, like, you know, computer effects to fix the situation, and that's not what they did back then.
Yeah, but then make a longer prosthetic that makes him not able to move his wrist. I watch these movies all the time, and I always see this.
Yeah, I mean...
like, he put his arm up on something, it's hot, completely draping, so it's like the wrist is there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was goofy, but...
He has the phantom limb, though.
He has the phantom limb, so he's feeling everything. He's feeling his fingers, he's feeling pain, he's feeling all sorts of things in his hand. But so they moved to New York, and
you know what's funny, before you say they moved to New York, I have to bring this up to you, because he was still at the thing, because there is this cat plot line.
So right? He was going back and forth and like writing at his Vermont house for a bit while they were getting settled, the wife and kid in the loft, right?
Did he go back?
Yeah, he went back and he was writing.
But I could swear that she was there, because he got up in the middle of the night and went into the drawing room.
Well, he did, but yeah. I don't think she was there.
I can swear she was. No, he couldn't sleep.
She had gone into New York City to you know, go set up the loft or whatever, and he's actually trying to learn how to draw with his left hand. Noticed that his ring, he had a ring on his finger that got severed, and that ring was missing. So the next morning, he decides to wake up and go look in the field for his hand. But here's the thing I was asking you about. No. This is months later, right? His wound is already healed. Why does he think his disgusting severed hand is still going to be there? It would have been picked up by animals. It would have been completely disintegrated down to the bones.
Well, I think in this moment, like... his life is falling apart. He can't do his job anymore. You know, everything's going wrong. So there's a scene where he goes and walks around the field, because at this point he's just like something that he lost that he can't have. And he just has nothing but like, I have to look for it. But I think the night before, the reason that there's a catalyst of this is that early in the film, we see that this cat has killed this lizard. And his daughter has found this severed tail of the lizard. And it's moving every time she goes to poke at it. So it sets up in his mind that what's making it move? It's not alive, you know? And he's like, it's not alive. And she's like, I don't know. I think it is. So that kind of sets up this theme in his brain. Because later on in the film, that same cat, for some odd reason, jumps on his drawing board at night. It hisses at him. And then it seems like something is crawling around in the room, knocking over things, because there's an open door to the outside. And for there's no way we know what happens here, but the cat for some reason jumps through a window.
Yeah, so weird.
It just jumps at the window in front of the camera.
Are they and implying he's weirded out. That the hand, that the cat had brought the hand into that cottage?
Yes, because something's knocking over, or something is scaring the cat. That it made it jump through a window. And you know what's really funny about this? They never mentioned this cat.
No.
Again.
No, and you know what's funny? It's like all of this is going on and all this weird shit's happening to him. And he never once tells his wife any of this.
Well, and there's a reason for that. I mean, that's a part of the plot, I would guess. But the reason that he goes to this field and to search for his hand is because this cat. And he has this weird sensation that something is following him.
Yeah.
And so goes to this field because his life sucks. It's just going to hell. And I think he's at this point finding out that he goes to like a dinner with his, I think it's his mother or his agent.
No, she's his agent. And she gets him the jobs, you know, for the artists and stuff. And he's a comic book creator. So to not have your right hand when you're right-handed and you're a comic book artist, I mean, that's devastating. And also, your wife is a total bitch, but, you know.
I don't think she is, but I can see why he thinks she is, but he goes to that, like a luncheon with her, and she's virtually telling him, hey, we should hand it over to, we should give it to another artist to take over. And there's this really young artist who loves Mandro, like, and wants to, is it Mandro?
Mandro.
Okay. He wants to take over, and you can storyboard it and you can write it still. And then he could do the art. And he's very reluctant, but he's like, I also had an offer to teach in California and teach art. So he's like, you know, I'm very interested in that. And I don't know if I can give over the rights to Mandro to be, you know, drawn by another artist. Well, all of this is coming down because he's like, I'm going to lose my favorite thing. I'm going to lose my creation. My wife obviously doesn't love me and we're very estranged. Like, I'm losing everything. He goes to this field to kind of reclaim what he's lost, right? And we actually see, and I love this, it's like the hand cam.
Oh my God. I was going to ask you, okay, so you know when they do the snake in the grass kind of thing, that yes. The monster's following you? They did that with the hand.
Yeah.
Now, I was going to ask camera. You, I'm like, oh, damn you. You know what? Give yourself a hand.
Thank you. A pat on the back.
Anyway, I hate us.
But yeah, but like, we do see it.
I mean, yeah, we see it. But
we see it watching him in this field.
I feel like, okay, I was going to ask you, but I stayed quiet through the whole thing because I'm like, is this really happening or is he having some sort of emotional breakdown?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. He finds the ring without the hand. He right. finds the ring here and brings it home and puts it in a ring box. And he can't help but, how is the ring off of the hand? You know, that's what he's thinking. And during the night, he keeps seeing images of the hand in the grass, like decomposing with like bugs on it. And it moves. Mm-hmm. And when he wakes up in the morning and he goes to look at his ring, right? And this all starts happening around the time that his wife's like, you know, I have to, you need to do something. You need to sell your character because we need money.
Yeah.
And if you don't, I have to get this job and I'm being offered this other job. And every time he shows her or she tries to talk to him about, I think this art is pretty good that this guy sent in. Every time she starts talking, he completely talks over her, shuts her down, and screams in her face.
Here you go.
Thank you.
So what do you think?
Well, they're interesting, but they're not Mandro.
Well, it's not exactly your style, but this...
All my enemies reincarnated. You really think Mandro believes in crap like that?
Well, there's a lot of scientific research being done on the possibility that...
He's even changed my outline. Look. His hallucinations.
Well, maybe he felt that it needed changing.
That's not what he was hired for. He was told to draw what I wrote.
I can't talk to you if you're going to shout at me.
I am not shouting at you. I'm shouting at him. Maddox. I mean, this isn't Mandro. This is some character he's made up.
But if he's going to take over the strip...
He is not supposed to take over the strip.
Why don't you let him?
Because I invented Mandro. I have lived with him for 10 years. He is mine. I created him.
That doesn't mean you can't give him up.
Give him up? Why should I?
Because you'll get a good income out of it, and we won't have to worry about Lizzie or the rent or what we're going to do after Christmas.
And then she's always like, you're screaming at me.
Yeah, this is like the part of the movie where I was like, okay, I know what's happening here already.
Yeah, because every time this happens, his anger increases, and it's so much. It's intense. And then that's when he realizes the ring has disappeared from its box. And now he's starting to get weirded out. Mm-hmm. Like that something's wrong, something's happening, and he keeps seeing black and white dream sequences of the hand moving.
Which I think is amazing because, like, at first I was like, okay, these are dreams, this, you know, but this is like, and also Oliver Stone, it should be noted, Oliver Stone did the dream sequences in black and white, which I loved. I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
I love when he puts black and white, but, I feel like this is, okay, I get the imagery, I get the whole point here, what he's trying to do.
Yeah, but the next thing he does is he goes, because he is being pushed into signing up with this new artist, he meets with the artist and his agent, and that's where we see Fletcher, who played Roger Rabbit. He is the artist, and he has made all these storyboards, but it is completely changing the character. He's adding thought bubbles and Mandro's thinking, and he's also resurrecting his villains, apparently, or something like that. And he's mad about this, and he's like, Mandro doesn't think.
Not what you did to my character.
What did I do with your character?
You weakened him.
How?
By making him look too deep inside himself. Making him too self-conscious. That's not Mandro. Mandro knows what he wants. Mandro doesn't think. You drew all those little fucking bubbles with him thinking.
Maybe Mandro should change a little bit. Begin to explore himself. Ask questions.
Oh, yes. I've been told. But you don't cut the balls off Superman.
Mandro does.
Yeah, Mandro is just like... knows. Yeah, he's just like a real macho man.
Yeah, and this is all... it's all his id. This is him. And this is how he sees the world. I know what I want. I deserve what I want. Mm-hmm. And I should get what I want. And when they pull out the art storyboards and say, like, we could talk about what we should change and all that. When they pull all these storyboards out, they're completely scratched over. And I would say, by the way, it's important to talk about, is that he is given a robotic arm. Or a prosthetic arm that he can control.
Yeah. It's a prosthetic arm, but a hand. It's a hand.
It's like the Terminator hand.
Yeah. Well, in the 80s, that's what the technology. Cyberdyne Systems, yes. Model 101 was not improved upon at that
Miles
moment.
Miles Dyson.
Yeah. But I will say, we're such a nerds, Jesus Christ. But he gets the hand, but then he accuses his little girl of having done that scribbling.
But yeah, but don't. To go back to that, he sees the scribbling. He's virtually like, they're like freaking out. How could you do this?
Right.
You ruined this guy's art. So he leaves. And this is the first time we see a black and white hand attack, because he is accosted by another man without a hand who is a homeless person.
Yeah.
Played by Oliver Stone.
Was it Oliver Stone?
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know this.
He's credited as Bum. Oliver Stone is accosting him. And then when he pushes him away and goes off in the street and says, he keeps calling him like names, which made me laugh that he's calling the director all these names, which is fun.
Sorry, excuse me.
Hey, what is that? Wait,
leave me alone.
Hey, you got no hands.
Come on, people like you should be.
Who do you think
bastards.
You are anyway?
Nice,
you
your friends, scum.
You'll see, you fucking
get out. Get lost.
Fucking fuck off. Fuck you.
Oliver Stone goes and drinks in an alleyway, and then he is killed by the hand.
Yeah.
It's the first time we see it, but it is done in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, we're like, we've only seen the black and white when it's like dreams or something like that. So we don't know what's happening here.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. It's the first time, but when he goes home, he does go, when he gets home, by the way, this is one of the moments where it's like, wow. He goes home, and I think previously before this, he goes to see his wife do the dancing training, and we see that the dance instructor, or whoever it is...
I think he's like a wellness expert.
Okay.
I mean, there's no dancing, really. They're doing yoga.
They're
and
posing,
breathing.
Which I thought was like ballet posing.
Yeah, it's like yoga poses and like nutritional things.
But
and...
that's funny, because he says straight up to her, like, this isn't yoga.
Great spine, guys. Feel the energy coming up from the soles of your feet. Bring your foot out to here. Out to here and drop the hip. Drop the hip. Good. Nice. Okay. Up through the kneecaps, up the spine, out through the crown of the head. Bring this kneecap up. Would you please? That's nice. And inhale, other side. Did I hear ow? I think I heard ow. Did I hear ow? Okay, that's nice. Yoga is not ow. Yoga is ah. All right. Breathe. This is very nice, Miss Fontaine, but it's not yoga. Extend the fingers, all right?
Yeah, but he does mention it's yoga. I don't know.
But
it's
he does.
Stupid anyway.
No, he says to her, this isn't yoga. And I thought they were doing poses because it made me think of Possession when the woman is like pushing the girl to stand still.
Yeah. Well, that was a dance class.
And that's what I thought this was, because why else stand like that? Stay with your hip like this, put your
those
back
are
up.
Yoga poses. Don't you know anything about yoga, California boy?
I'm just going to say one more time. He says, this is not yoga. He literally says it in the sequence.
Yoga is not ow. Yoga is ah. All right, breathe.
I mean, did you take 401 to 305?
Okay.
I don't know anything about yoga either. I don't know. I don't know what they were doing.
But he,
it looked like yoga poses.
But he told her it's not yoga. They're
I thought he said this is yoga.
No, he calls her Yoga Girl. This isn't Yoga, Yoga Girl or whatever.
Oh, okay. Okay, okay, okay.
Whatever.
It doesn't even matter. But
he's watching.
Fun fact, I'm wrong.
But he's posing, like he's touching her in a way where she's smiling and he sees it from afar.
I said it to you. I'm like, yeah, they're doing each other. Hands down.
There's definitely a spark here. But when he gets home from the Oliver Stone murder, he goes home and he finds her and him sitting down having some kind of like psychiatry moment.
Spiritual mantra.
Because she is sharing her like secrets with him and she's crying and he's telling her it's okay. And they look at him when he gets home and he does nothing but walk away and accuse the daughter of maybe
scribbling,
defiling the art. Because the daughter says, I know you didn't like it. I didn't like it either because they changed your character. So it's kind of like maybe she did do it, but then we know it's not. We know it's him. Or the hand.
Or the hand.
That's followed them to the New York. Hand.
This movie so far is like, okay, not at all. Like still what I expected. I thought it was going to change dramatically, but it doesn't. It's from this, from that moment on when he kills Oliver Stone in goddamn alley, I was like, okay, I understand what's going on here now. This is like one man's descent into madness.
Yeah, without it, you know what I kept thinking of? A far superior film, Magic, with Anthony Hopkins.
Yeah.
I kept thinking that this is what this is, but it cannot even get close to being as interesting as this movie. As Magic, I mean.
Mm-hmm.
It can't even get as close to being as interesting and well shot and well developed as that movie is. It wants to be that, but it's not. It's just so obvious what this movie is.
It is, yeah.
And I will say that it's obvious and it's convoluted at the same time.
You know, because I was going to tell you, I'm like, you know, Michael Caine is taking this very well. Like, if I was a comic book artist or like somebody that uses their hands a lot, you know, like a pianist or whatever, and my hand got severed.
Yeah.
I would probably lose my shit also. But the way they're showing us that he handles it is so calm and collected. And I'm just like, I thought he'd be like a little more upset.
I know, be pissed off, man.
Like, you know, something. I mean, he just seems to be like, okay. So, you know, his wife is staying with him, obviously, because of sympathy. But even his publicist says, you know, the moment that you start working again, she's going to leave you. Because she's trying to get him other jobs because he obviously can't draw anymore.
No, she actually says to him, the reason you're not doing anything like giving another artist a chance or anything like that is because you are holding on to her. And that you know that you're afraid that she'll leave you.
Yeah,
this it's is not about it's. It's true. She will leave him.
Oh yeah,
because
she's gonna leave him.
He does not love her. She's an item to him.
Yeah.
Mandro doesn't think, Joe.
Mandro doesn't think.
Mandro gets what he wants. So I mean, that's him in a nutshell in this movie. And when he saw her and them talking, he basically says, "I have a job and I'm taking it." In California.
Yeah, so now we're at the second half of this movie where things get crazy interesting. Because
that's a stretch.
We
but okay.
get some more characters in this movie. So what's that woman's name that plays Jane Goodhouse or whatever that sells the Dietzes or something?
Oh, Annie McEnroe.
Annie McEnroe. Yeah, we meet her. She is a student in his class that he's teaching at.
You're so much nicer than I am because we don't meet her. We see her in the classroom and she gives a look and that's it. And then suddenly she comes to his house one night,
and
his cabin.
And bangs him.
And just says, hey, I like the way you look at me, although we have never seen him look at her in any way, shape, or form that means anything.
Nope, takes her top off.
She just gets naked and she says, let's have sex.
Yep.
Never looks at my ass. With you, it's different. I like the way you look at me. I feel like it's me you're looking at. I'm kind of old-fashioned. I like to make it in bed, okay?
Okay.
And that's exactly what happens.
Let me tell you something. When I say let's have sex, it is the most appealing sex scenes I have ever seen.
You know, they didn't. Here's the thing. I really don't think either one of them earned their paycheck in this scene. At least make it convincing.
Well, I feel like she earned her paycheck because she has to have a robotic arm in her close to her mouth and have her say over and over, do it.
Yeah, do it.
Do it.
Do it as if
now.
Like, is it in yet?
Get it.
Come on. Do it. Just don't hold off. Come on.
I mean, she's saying like that, and it's just him, like, thrusting upon her, and her saying,
is
like...
Is it a thrust? Because thrust would be something.
It's definitely... It keeps happening. She keeps saying it, though. And she looks uncomfortable.
It's more like he's trying to screw in a light bulb, but yeah, very slowly.
It's wild. And my favorite part about how this ends, this sex scene, is she's putting her clothes on. She goes, so should I come back tomorrow? Oh, should I come back again? And he's like, yeah, how about tomorrow night?
Want me to come back sometime?
Tomorrow.
Okay.
And I was like, you really like, want more of
bro,
this?
I'm like, you're fucking married, first of all. Get rid of the other wife.
Yeah.
And secondly, this girl, like, if she's so eager to just jump in your bed with you after, like, what, no time at all? And be so, like, I mean, aggressiveness is a good thing sometimes, but, like, if she's this aggressive with you out of nowhere, then she's probably this aggressive with every other man.
Yeah, and I think this is important here. The reason that she came here is one of the more fascinating things that is never explained and is never really talked about in a way where it feels like it's really happening. But what happened here was that when she came in the door, she brought her sketchbook from class and she handed it to him and said, I thought you would want this back. He kind of flips through it because it's her sketches and he puts it to the side. And that's when the whole thing comes out. She's like, give me a beer and a can. I'm going to drink it like a man, you know? And then she gets naked. But we see when she leaves the house that the sketchbook's still there. He picks it up. And when he opens it, there is a photo of her naked with the hand grabbing at her crotch.
And it's a good drawing.
It's a really cool drawing. And it's like, oh, the reason she came here is he drew in her book that basically let's have sex. And then she was like, okay.
I mean, does that work on everybody? Because I'm pretty sure
you would get the cops called.
I need a little, yeah, I'm going to have to call the
police.
But
it's Michael Caine. Can we just point out that Michael Caine looks like a psychotic Willy Wonka in this film?
Oh my God, thank you for saying it. His hair.
His hair is like just when Willy Wonka is yelling, good day, sir.
Yes, good day, sir.
That's him throughout his entire, yes. And he always looks like he's a killer.
He does. Here's the thing. Now, this girl is a cute, what is she, 20-something, young 20-something? There is no way in hell this girl would be at all interested in this man. I don't give a shit what his talent is.
No, I don't believe it at all. And in fact, the other fellow teacher, who is the psychiatry teacher, wants to have sex with her. And she keeps saying no. And she even tells Michael Caine, you know, you look at me better than he does.
Yeah.
So what's the weirdest thing happens now, right? It's like Christmas time. And I don't know if the hand has done anything else. I'm sure the hand's done more things.
This is where it gets exciting, Scott.
I don't know. It's when you say exciting, it's like something that goes, huh? And then it goes back to nothing again, and then it comes back again. But yeah, what happens here is it's Christmas, and I guess he tries to call his wife, and she's like, oh, I thought this was the perfect time for us to take more time away from each other. And he's just like, oh, this is some bullshit.
They've already been away from each other for like 2 months, and he's been banging this girl.
I mean, he sees like the hand jumping through windows. I don't know what's happening
here. He's having visions. He's like totally just losing his shit.
Yeah, but he is like hooking up with this girl, and on Christmas, for some reason, she's helping him put up a Christmas tree. And this is the weirdest damn moment ever. He's virtually saying, oh, my wife's coming in tomorrow. And then she says, she's crying the whole scene. She is like crying.
Yeah, well, because he gives her a gift, which is like a sexy negligee.
But she's crying for the gift. She's crying. Like, he's like, are you going to come back? Are you going to stay the night? And she's like, I might leave time for Christmas. But she's crying the whole time. Like, I like you, but you're married and you won't be with me.
Okay, that's what I was getting to from this scene. But like, this chick is so off the wall. Okay, she bangs him. And then he gives her a negligee and she's crying and she's saying, I'm going to leave town. I'm going to go to Los Angeles or whatever for, what, 2 weeks or whatever? 2 weeks
with friends.
With friends. And he's like, okay. So she kisses him and leaves and goes to work. And he says, I'll meet up with you at the local bar. So he goes to the bar where he finds the actor that played Sheriff Farley in My Cousin Vinny. And he's friends with him. And Sheriff Farley is drunk as fuck and telling him that, hey, you know, I'm leaving town for 2 weeks to Los Angeles with that chick.
But it doesn't even come out like that. The first thing he actually says is word for word everything she says.
Yeah. Oh, I'm leaving town. I need to get away for a few weeks. And I'm going to California. I'm going to Los Angeles. I'm like, what the? Are you kidding me? So you're telling me that this is the girl that he is also sleeping with, the same girl, and she's crying because Michael Caine's wife is coming into town, so she's sad about that. But she's going to have sex with another guy for 2 weeks.
Well, she's going to
party
to get away from Michael Caine because she can't be in town when the wife comes in, and she's sad that she can't be with Michael Caine, and that Michael Caine's not taking their relationship serious, I guess.
Oh, my God. So this is what you do?
None of this is explained. We're only guessing and assuming that this is what the character is going through because I don't think she wants to leave. She was actually, like, shocked that she got a gift, and she's like, I'll wear the lingerie for you tonight. But when this guy tells Michael Caine that the guy says straight up, I'm going to go have sex with her all weekend. And he gets jealous rage. And I was like, how do you have any say over this woman?
Right to be jealous or filled with any kind of rage. Because first of all, you're a married man, yes. You fucking turd.
And she's coming over tomorrow. The wife is coming with a child tomorrow. And he goes on we don't really know what's going on here because we see him drive to Reno in the rain. And at the same time, we see the girl gets off of work and comes back to the house with the doors wide open. And she goes to put the lingerie on and the hand jumps out of the Christmas tree and she fights it and gets murdered.
Now, this is where I was like, okay, hold on a second here. Yeah. This is out of time. Obviously, because when you see him driving to Reno, he was obviously driving to Reno for a reason.
But the movie seems to desperately think that we might think the hand is
alive. Yeah.
Like, I don't know why the movie thinks that. And there's another possibility here. And I really don't know. But the movie also seems to make an kind of a reference that Michael Caine might have some kind of psychic ability.
Oh my God, yeah.
Because it seems like a lot of times he's moving things with his brain.
It sounds like that too.
Yeah, his brain. His mind.
Moving things with his brain. But like, I feel as though this movie, like I think Oliver Stone kind of was treating us as if we're dummies.
Yes.
You know?
That's what I'm saying.
Like, come on, man. Come on. Like, I know your body of work. You don't treat people like this. Like, honestly, I'm sitting here watching this movie. I'm like, oh, come on. We're supposed to believe for 2 seconds, even 1 second, that this hand is real. Yeah. It's really happening. It's coming out of Christmas trees and choking someone. Like, really?
Yeah.
I mean, it's absolutely absurd. So you see where we're going here with this. It's very obvious.
Well, the friend, I would say the other teacher that was supposed to go away with her also... when they show him, he is beyond wasted and says that girl never showed up and ditched him and that he can't get over. He's got like rings under his eyes. Like he is just bombed out of his mind. And he's comes up with the idea that Michael Caine must have been having sex with her. I don't know why he gets this, but that he drives and cuts him off in the street and makes him pull over. So in the rain, he goes and interrogates Michael Caine in his car, and he doesn't look as blitzed anymore.
No.
He's completely, like, almost sober, and he's saying, like, I know you did it, and Michael Caine's, like, scared.
Well, first of all, okay.
So he admits that he has been sleeping with her.
The fact that that Michael Caine even the fact that he would even be sleeping with this girl is shocking in itself.
Either one of these guys.
Either one of these guys. Either one. They both look like they're, you know, 58, first of all. But either way, they got nothing for this chick at all. There's nothing there. So I'm like, okay. And then I'm going to start arguing over this. Like, who's banging her and who's not banging her? We know what's going to happen here. Obviously, the hand comes out of the freaking back seat of, we'll call him Sheriff Farley. Sheriff Farley's Jeep and strangles him to death. So, okay, this isn't obvious Oliver Stone, what just happened. We're to believe that the hand is now getting revenge for Michael Caine.
Or, because every time the hand does attack, Michael Caine goes into some kind of, like, rage-induced coma. And we're told by the guy that's getting killed here that earlier in the film that he has blackouts, and then during these blackouts he might be having these psychotic episodes.
Right.
That he's becoming like another character. And so when they shoot it, it looks, and by the way, it's no longer black and white. It's the hand is killing people.
Oh, it's there.
When it kills people, by the way, it somehow crushes their throat to make them shoot blood out of their mouths all over the place. And it seems almost like they're trying to say that he is willing the hand with some kind of telepathy. I don't really understand it. The way they shoot it is just weird.
Well, they could tell us that all they want. Yeah, but I mean, but honestly, we're too smart. I mean, we have like at least more than one brain cell.
Yeah, and also there's a lot of references to how the car smells. And yeah. I was like, well, obviously that girl's dead body's in the car, like in the trunk. It doesn't seem like a shock because they tell us multiple times when the wife comes, they have another fight. And the fight is next level.
Yeah, it is.
Again, because she never even empties her clothes, basically because she brought the daughter here to just say goodbye so they can move on to San Diego where she now has a job. And yep. Michael Caine, knowing that that girl has got to be dead, like something has happened to her, and he even changes the box with the lingerie. He changes the tag for her.
Mm-hmm.
He writes his wife's name. Like, he did that off camera. We never saw that. Yeah. But he's just like, oh, the hand did that for me.
Well, it's crazy because the box of the lingerie came in. It said to Stella from John. And then it changed to Anne from John, which I was like, okay, he's got to be coherent enough to have done this. Like,
he doesn't remember. When he sees it, he's like, oh, that's cool. The hand's helping.
Oh, my God. But he's not, because he seems terrified by it. Every time he has one of those, like, flashes of the hand, he seems like, oh, my God. Like, you know, aghast.
Yeah. So it keeps coming. Like, it gets more intense that he is confronting the wife about leaving, and he's getting more and more psychotic. Mm-hmm. And, like, this is without the hand doing anything. It's him full on grabbing his wife's mouth, mm-hmm. and almost choking her. And can we point out, and I don't know if you noticed this, what is going on with the placement of giant picture frames with just a black and white photo of a cast member?
I don't understand that.
Do you notice that in this movie?
It's like the headshot of the actor.
Yeah. So I don't know if you noticed this, but earlier in the movie, when they first go to their New York, they go in the bed after he's lost his hand, there is a giant picture frame facing them that looks like the brother from Night of Living Dead.
Oh my God.
Did you notice it? It's huge. I was in shot and I was like, they got to go sleep with that looking at them.
Oh my God.
Right. And then
I didn't notice it
in this scene. I think this is comical. Either she brought a picture frame of her daughter's face and put it next to her bed, or he sleeps with this next to his bed.
That's his daughter. So, yeah, he has it there. That's his room.
He has that giant photo of his daughter next to the bed that he's sleeping with that girl.
That's
that works.
That's not the most unusual thing. He still has a daughter. He hates his wife, but he still has a daughter.
Joe, look, I love you, but I'm not going to frame a black and white photo of you, just a giant headshot staring at me all the
Why
time.
Why not? Why it's not? Creepy. It's very nice.
It's a creepy, creepy idea.
If you loved me, you would put a giant headshot of me.
So here's what I'm going to do to every friend I have. Every friend, every time I go to a party or whatever, I'm going to sneak a headshot of myself into their room.
Do it.
And put a giant picture of my face staring.
You know,
at
you should put lipstick on and do like a kissy lip on there.
Oh, that's weird. That's even weird. Oh, you say sign it with a kiss?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I like that. I thought you meant me make a kissy face in the photo.
No, you actually put lipstick on your lips and kiss it.
You know what's funny is during Christmas, I do this to my sister-in-law. I actually hide baby photos in frames around the house. So one photo in particular wasn't found for like 3 years, but they
Which
did find
was
it.
That?
I put a photo on their little mantle, and then they found it years later.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. My God. I love that. I love that whole
idea. Who the hell is this?
Was it you as a kid?
Yeah, it was me as a kid. So, yes. So he gets crazy. Now, he finally snaps, and he goes to sleep in the middle of the night, and he's just really angry. Because earlier in the day, she went and drove off, and he is hoping, he keeps having a vision that the hand is killing for him, and that he sees his wife die in a fiery car crash. And he's so excited about it that he's sweating like he's on fire.
Yeah.
And she comes home and nothing's happened. And he's like, damn it, the hand didn't help me this week.
I know. Like, you know? Why is he shocked when he sees her? Yeah. I was like, wait a minute. Is he like mentally on this earth? Like, where is he?
He thinks that he's seeing through the hand murdering her, and he's witnessing it, and he's happy about it because she's going to take the daughter with him because the daughter doesn't want to stay with him. Because he is psychotic, and even the daughter sees it.
Yeah, I definitely would not want to stay with him.
Although I do not like that the daughter is now inducted into this like cult thing with fitness, because
it's
she's
a fitness cult.
She's like, I'm losing weight. I'm on a diet. And it's like, oh, you're a little kid. I feel terrible for you. You know, that sucks. But he thinks that she died in this fire crash, and we even see shots of the police coming to the door, which doesn't happen.
No.
He's like screaming at his daughter, it's not your mother. It's not your mother at the door. And it is the mother.
Yeah. So he's actually going so far as to have visions that the police are coming to tell him his wife is dead.
And we even see the fire crash.
Yeah.
I
was like, holy shit. And the little girl, the poor little girl. Let me tell you something. This actress has had to deal with some crazies, man.
Yeah.
I mean, Faye Dunaway playing Joan Crawford, beating her with a coat hanger and shit. I mean, this little kid, I wonder what happened to her.
I don't know. I have to look. No, I didn't look. I will say, though, that she does witness now the next thing, because during the night, Michael Caine is asleep. The daughter's asleep. The wife goes to sleep, and she is attacked by the hand who crawls off the bed and starts choking her out to kill her. And they hear her scream, and Michael Caine runs in the room and stops the hand from killing her. But she looks like she's dead.
Yeah.
She's beaten senseless, and the hand jumps out the window. And he grabs her head like he's doing it.
Right.
And so the daughter runs in the room and says, Dad, you're hurting her. You're stop hurting mommy. And he's like, I'm not. I was just trying to stop the victim. The killer jumped out the window. And he's like, call 911. I'm like, this little girl, does she even know what to do? She's like calling 911. I'm like, he chases the hand outside now in the rain. And what I do not understand this, and I need you to explain it to me. He follows what I would only say is puddles of blood in the rain?
Yeah.
What is this?
Is it the hand's blood?
That's what I was wondering. I'm like, is the hand bleeding?
Yeah, I have no
idea. Is this the wife's blood?
We're thinking that, I was thinking the whole time that it was the hand because it jumped through the window and it's got cuts.
But it was like puddles.
Scotty.
Of red blood in the mud. And he follows it into the garage. And now, Oliver Stone has seen Evil Dead, apparently, because this entire sequence is the Evil Dead fight with the hand, but in the shack from Evil Dead.
Oh, my God. Okay, yeah, this is the garage where the car is, but it looks like the shack from Evil Dead.
Yes.
It really does.
This is a full Evil Dead moment, and I'm and I got to say, this is the best moment of the movie because it is straight up hilarious. Michael Caine fights the hand.
It's amazing.
Now, one of my favorite things that the Michael Caine is going for it. He's like, I have to earn this paycheck, I guess.
Yeah.
So he is going all out. The best thing the hand does while it's beating his ass is crawl up his pants leg and crush his balls and then shoot out of the zipper to punch him in the face.
That was a very Evil Dead moment.
he sticks a butcher knife in it and it crawls over and then grabs a tire of the car and flattens the tire.
I was like, wow.
Which makes him like get air shot in his face and like fall over so the can choke him out. And then all of a sudden we see him wake up holding his own neck with his real hand.
Yeah.
And the cops come in with the daughter.
And the wife is okay. The wife has survived.
Because when the daughter's shaking the dead mother's corpse, like, I love that.
Dead mother's corpse.
And somebody's responsible. When she's shaking this body, she's her eyes are rolled back in her head, her tongue's out. She actually starts waking up. I was like, wait a minute. She was killed.
Yeah. I mean, she was definitely killed. I mean, she's bloody and shit.
Yeah.
But she made it out alive. I was going to mention to you, though, when the police show up, they keep that little girl there the whole entire time. They do not
move this little girl.
This little girl has just seen her mother get hauled off in an ambulance. Okay. Then her father's all bloody. On the floor of a garage, the police are there.
His pants are unbuttoned because the hand jumped out of his crotch.
Yes, his pants are, he's all disheveled. He's completely gross. And the police say, you know what? There's a really bad stench in here. I'm going to need you to open that trunk. He opens the trunk and there are the two dead bodies of Sheriff Farley and the girl Stella that he was banging.
But back up, because the trunk is now, I would say, an entire room.
Okay. Two bodies are in there. Looked like
they're not on top of each other.
No, they're not.
They're laying side by side.
But didn't he have like one of those big ass, like,
Joe, that trunk.
That was a big car.
This looked like a room. This looked like a bathtub.
It did. I mean, it was clearly not the trunk of a car.
Yeah. And then we have to talk about the two victims' faces, because the guy that you're, Bruce McGill, or whatever his name is, he has something in his mouth that looks like his robotic arm.
It does.
It's in his mouth.
Yeah.
And then her open mouth, gray, with her eyes crossed and her tongue sticking out. And it made me laugh so hard when I saw it.
It was
comical. And they don't just show it once. They zoom in on this poor girl's face.
Yeah. I mean, it was pretty comical. I was like, oh my gosh, when you told me Stan Winston did this, I was like, why?
Okay, now the ultimate sin happens, because this should have been just the ending.
It should have,
But unfortunately, the ultimate sin happens where we see the entire movie of him killing everybody.
Yeah, which
we have to watch him do everything.
We knew it, because obviously there's not a real severed hand going around obeying, you know, his thoughts.
But then the movie does the Brazil ending, which makes it so much more confusing, because now we see him in Arkham Asylum. And when I say Arkham Asylum, in the way of Brazil, because it's shot in this weird computer room with this checkerboard floor and a weird scientist woman having him all tied up like with electrodes or his head and all this stuff. And she's talking about how, you know, he is a murderer, like he is psychotic and he had a break, and that he's got it. Like, she's like doing all this stuff. And I will say this, the Michael Caine is acting his ass off in the sequence, because he's crying without moving his eyes. And he's just like, but he won't stop staring up at this air vent.
Yeah, I was like, okay, is that an escape route? What's he looking at it for?
Yeah, she's like, she sits down. She actually unbuttons his hands, does the straps on his hands. And he still has the robotic arm.
Which is crazy, because let me tell you something. If he was in like a maximum security prison, which he damn well should have been after two murders and who knows what else.
It's Arkham Asylum. It's straight up Arkham Asylum.
They would, number one, take that weapon off of him.
Thank you.
And number two, he wouldn't be in an isolated room alone with some mad scientist woman.
Yeah.
There would be guards.
I mean, there's like 100 computers in this room. I don't even know what's happening. And my favorite thing is she says, shake my hand. And he starts crushing her hand, but she likes it.
Yeah, like, why?
And I was like, what are we in now? Are we in a different movie?
Like, did we jump forward into time?
Yeah, is like Bruce Willis going to show up from Unbreakable? Is this in the Unbreakable universe? I was like, what is this? Like, I don't know. But then she sits down across from him And he starts laughing. And she's like, what are you laughing at? And he's like, the hand is going to kill you.
The hand is at your throat. Yeah, I see the hand.
And she's like, there is no hand. It's you.
You're a psycho.
You're a psycho. And you have to realize it. And he starts laughing. And the sure shit, the hand jumps up and out of nowhere while he doesn't move. And it crushes her throat and her head explodes.
Yeah.
And he just sits there laughing. And I don't know what's happening anymore. I was like, wait a minute. Are we now saying that the hand existed?
No. This is just another stupid metaphor for like, he's envisioning killing her. So he's making it, he's still in that same frame of mind where he sees the hand doing it, doing his bidding, but he's really unstrapped. So he fucking kills her. Period.
Why do this sequence? What is this sequence?
Because he thinks it's artsy, but it's stupid.
Is this his, like, oh, this is my Norman Bates moment?
Yes. Wow. He thought he was doing directory things. You're not. You're not doing directory things. This directory is literally things. Stupid. It's stupid. It's mind-boggling stupid.
It's baffling. And I would say that this last 20 minutes are the best parts.
That's what I'm saying. That's when the movie starts to get going.
Because it's silly fun.
It's silly. Yeah, it is. But I will say that a lot of the time I was watching this movie with all seriousness. I mean, I knew that this whole hand thing represented his descent into madness. Like,
it's so obvious.
Jack Nicholson, you know, he just lost his shit at the Overlook. But this situation was kind of like that too, which, you know, The Shining came out before this one. So I feel like he kind of just borrowed shit from every other movie before this. There's little elements of every other horror movie that came before this.
I mean, if it's based off the book, I wonder how loosely it's based on that book. But
it's true. It is based on a book. So I say correct it. You know, I don't know what the book was about, but it's about, I think it's something with a lizard, the lizard's tail or something.
It's the same story.
Like cutting off a limb.
That's why we see the lizard's tail early in the movie. It's putting in his mind how it's alive, how his severed hand that he can't find is alive.
Right.
And it's, I feel like this story is decent if it was told in any other form. Like, I kept thinking about the whole time, like, if this was a Batman story, this would actually be better. But I kept thinking, David Cronenberg. If this was a David Cronenberg movie, I bet this would be a classic. Because David Cronenberg is so good at body horror and that exploration of, you know, your sanity breaking and using like forms of body horror to do that.
Yeah, I like that concept. I like the concept of, you know, the slowly sinking into madness and having like a metaphor. You know, I like that. But this one was so on the nose.
It's too obvious and it should know that it's obvious, so it shouldn't even try not to be obvious. It should explore what's really happening psychotically.
True.
You know, like psychologically, I mean. I feel like that's why I brought up Magic, because I feel like, screw this movie, watch Magic, because Magic understands how to do this well.
Yeah.
Like, it's, in that form, the hand is a ventriloquist dummy.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, that's more of a clever like dissection of the same theme and these concepts.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I feel like there was a, I don't want to say easier way to do this, or I want to say like
a more entertaining way to do
it. This is inventive. Okay, I'm not gonna lie, it was different. It was a different movie, but was it like cohesive? You know, it there were moments, I'm not gonna lie, I wasn't ever taken out of the movie.
I'm surprised. Like, I wasn't. Like,
I was in it. I was definitely in it. But I feel, though, it's like, okay, Oliver Stone, you don't need to treat us like we're freaking morons. Like, we get it. We understand. There are better ways to draw out this situation.
Well, whatever this movie did, it definitely opened the door for him to grow as an artist.
Yeah.
Because after this, I think he did a great 12 movie run. So I'm impressed that this movie was the gateway to that. He had made another movie like the same year, which is like a slight black dark horror comedy. I don't know what it is, but I've never seen that one either. So now I'm intrigued to know what that one is. But I would say that if I had to rate this film out of 10, I would say that I go with IMDb on this one and give this a 5. I almost want to go to a 4 because it's so boring.
Yeah, but 4 is so bad it's good. I don't think this movie was good. I want to say it's mediocre.
Yeah.
It's a mediocre film. I mean, I'll forget that I watched it at some point. Not this month, of course.
Oh, I'm definitely. But I will say that when I see Michael Caine in another movie, I'm going to think of this.
Oh,
I'm going to be like, oh, yeah. Remember that time that he fought his hand and how funny that was?
You know what's funny, though? It's like, you know, say what you want about Michael Caine. He's had a long career.
Oh, my God. It's
amazing. His reasons for doing certain movies are his reasons. And let me tell you something. If I was going to do a movie that would buy me a new house, I would fucking take it. I wouldn't give a crap.
This one wasn't even a house. It was a garage. And you know what's funny about the trivia about this is that he did this just for that, but they actually became really good friends. They never filmed another movie together again.
That's strange.
But they were friends after this movie.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I'm also going to give it a 5. It's just mediocre. But, should I do my segment? Just going to...
Yeah, if you can.
Okay, well, yeah, it's hard, but I'll do it. All right. Oh. All right, so this is our segment of Why We Can't Have Nice Things, where I read two extremes of online reviews. One 10-star and a 1-star review. As proof that people can't review movies at all, and they just, like, fuck everything up. Because, I mean, some of these reviews, like, dude, you even hear yourself? You're typing this out. Like, you have to be rereading what you're writing.
Maybe it was the hand.
Oh, my God. Could be. But here, this is a 1. It's just rubbish. So it says, rubbish. A blatant ripoff of The Beast with 5 Fingers. Starts well, but then just goes into slasher nonsense. Caine does tend to pick some awfully scripted movies. Hopefully he was well paid. Oliver Stone shows little of the talent he would go on to be. A turkey. 1 out of 10. All right, that's not that. This movie is not that bad, man. Like,
it's not that bad.
To say it's a 1.
Yeah, I would say that I wouldn't suggest this to anybody, and it is very forgettable. But I do think that it isn't a 1. There, I don't think Michael Caine is exactly terrible in this movie. He is doing hammy acting.
Yeah, he is. I have to read you this 10-star review.
Oh, I can't believe it's 10.
There's a couple 10-stars, but I'm picking this one simply for the humor in it. It's just too much. All right, here we go. Brilliant and terrific. This is one of the most terrific movies of Michael Caine. The music and noises are excellent. The cast is perfect.
Interesting.
Secondary actors and rednecks are really ugly. The story is a variation on the theme of The Lizard Tale. See this movie if you find it.
Wow.
Thank you.
I like the rednecks. They referencing the one bar sequence in this movie.
Secondary actors and rednecks are really ugly.
Wow.
All right.
Okay.
Okay, well, here, let me, here's
another. Was that written by Demonoid?
All right, here's another 10 real quick. I really don't know what's wrong with this movie to get an average rating around 5. There was never a dull moment in this movie. Whoa. Yeah, have you watched a sex scene?
Oh my Dummy. God.
Everybody acted perfectly in this movie. Story is excellent, especially the end. That was a very clever double twist, and i.e. a twist followed by another twist. Since it's a supernatural story, we need not worry about logic. Lovers of thriller movies should not ignore this movie. So let's throw out logic. Let's throw it out. Just throw it out because it's a supernatural story.
You definitely don't need logic in your movie.
You don't, I mean, he needs some logic in his review, but I got nothing. I got nothing. Nothing.
Well, I mean, hey, look, if he enjoyed it, all to him. But
okay.
We will also say that this is on our list. This is not added to our list because it's not the worst movie ever made.
Nope.
And it doesn't come close to half the movies on the list.
No, so, it does not.
Yeah.
We started out, okay, I dare I say we started out strong because we're only going down from here.
Maybe not. Maybe we will have fun or laugh our asses off during one of these movies.
Oh, I'm definitely going to laugh my ass off.
Which is what we're really looking forward to.
Yeah.
I think that's what we always kind of hope for, is the diamond in the rough, the one that we're just so happy to bullshit about and laugh about.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that definitely this movie feels more like The Appointment in that sense, where it's like, what was this about? What are they trying to say? What were they doing here? Why do they film this like this? Because there's a lot of similarities in how they filmed it. There's a lot of similarities to like using black and white or in dream sequences and like, what are you doing here? Usually I would say that some of that stuff is one of my favorite things. I do like arty films, but there isn't anything left to the imagination, because except for the ending, the Brazil Arkham Asylum ending.
Arkham Asylum.
Yeah, I keep referencing the Terry Gilliam movie, Brazil, by the way, if anybody doesn't know what I mean by God. Brazil.
That movie is great.
That's a classic.
Yeah, that movie is awesome. But like, so what's the Ron Jeremy one called? Dismember?
No, One-Eyed Monster.
Shut up.
Yeah.
I like Dismember. Get it?
That's a great name, actually.
Penis is a member. Get it? Member? Your member? I don't know. I have a feeling that it's going to be comical, that movie, like Evil Bong was, you know, like jokey. We're not actually going to get to see, I'm sorry, let me rephrase that. We're not actually going to be subjected to the hell that is Ron Jeremy's actual penis.
No, I mean, I'm guessing it's a guest starring spot.
Oh, okay. I thought he was the star. I really don't need all that. I think we're probably just going to get basically a softcore porno. But either way, I'm here. If something gets, you know, if there's gore in it and there's murdery people and murdery members and murdery body parts, I'm here for that.
Well, that's if we were doing that next week. But next week we are actually doing 1996's Killer Tongue.
Oh, okay. So the Ron Jeremy one's not even next.
Yeah,
okay.
I don't think it is.
Okay. Well, it's coming.
Yes. I said 96, right?
Yeah, you said 96.
Okay, cool. That's the next one we're doing then.
A and movie it's called The Tongue?
The Killer Tongue.
The Killer Tongue.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. All right. That's all I got.
As always, guys, thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Anything you could do to help us out with the podcast, give us a theme, you know, recommend some movies, anything. Just write us on Instagram at Just Another Movie Night, or Joe at The Crafty Misfit, and tell us anything. We'd love to hear it. We'd love to hear why you think Michael Caine deserves an Oscar for this film. We deserve, tell us if The Hand itself deserved an Oscar. I'd love to hear it. So reach us there and get us, and thanks for listening again, and have a good one, and bye.
Sounds like a pile of shit if you ask me.